Welcome to episode 3 of Ratchet Research. This is the podcast where we talk about pop culture within an historical context.
Sort of, yeah.
It's research of a ratchet sensibility. And that was your host, Kat. You can reach her at xrecluse. Or you can email blackgirlsquee@gmail.com with comments about the show. I am Dee Dee. Hopefully you've heard me on Black Girl Squee. You can reach me at dustdaughter or at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Now for our show. And this time we're talking about sci-fi's new space drama, The Expanse.
Woo! Wrong show.
What? Anyway, this is the show that people have been comparing to Battlestar Galactica. They've been calling it Game of Thrones in space.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they'll say anything to get people, get eyeballs.
Do it.
Hey, if it works, it works. But, you know, this show is better than both of those shows.
Yes.
And for one, it's a lot less rapey.
Oh my God. So we have literally had two seasons of, or a season and a half of no rape.
And no even threats of sexual violence.
Oh my God.
This
is like, I've never even thought of that. You literally just blew my mind.
Test that, Bechdel. Anyway, so much good stuff to say about this show. And we're going to get started. First of all, we're going to get in. Kat, you've read all the things. Tell us why you love this series so much. It started out as a series of books.
Yeah.
By
James S.A. Corey. It's two authors, and that's their pen name. I don't know their real names because, honestly, I don't care. I will read everything they write together collectively, though. Like during the first season, like I had a Tumblr friend who was like totally obsessed with the show, especially two of the characters. And I would like always see it on my dash and I was like, okay, dang, is this what it's like? But you know, when you get like obsessed with a new show and you're just like always like reblogging and like talking about it. And then it was like, there's just one scene in the first season that was totally amazing. And I was like, well, I am obsessed now. So I'm going to like watch this show. And it was the scene in the first season where that one, I don't want to like spoil too much, but that one character gets killed and like Alex and Amos and Naomi have to like secure the room that they're in. Amos and Naomi like hold hands and his hand is covered in blood. And he tells her that he's really happy that he met her or something. I was like,
I was like,
let me just check off all the things that this appeals to me. let's start with the creepy. His hand is covered in blood. and they don't even blink to like hold hands and they think they're going to die. And it's like totally like beautiful and kind of creepy. And I was like, yes, I got it. I'm going to watch. And considering our last episode, no one should be shocked by that. And so I like watched it and I remember the first, you know, like half or so of the season, I was like, okay, this is all right. And then the end of the first season, I was like, wow, that was like a really good season. And I liked that it's based off of books, so I'm gonna like read the books. And I think for me, like the books fed my obsession. Whenever the first season ended early last year, or actually maybe it was late 2015, something like that. I don't remember the timeline anymore. I have read all six books? Is it six or
Hold
seven? I
on.
don't even know anymore. That's how deep I am,
It's
y'all.
six going on seven. Yeah, six or seven. Yeah.
Yeah, because they just last December they published Babylon's Ashes, which is the last. So there are then three more books. So there must be six. I think there are nine books total. And so in the past year, I've read all six of those books, and I'm totally obsessed. And I was like waiting very impatiently for this second season to start. And I think the reason I like it and the thing that appealed to me is how good the characterization is. And I feel like there are some characters you've seen in other shows or like an archetype in other shows, and they either do it really well here or they do it better. So yeah, I kind of, and after I started reading the books, I literally spent probably all of, like, I'm an insomniac, so I will watch TV or listen to TV as I fall asleep. And there was like a solid 2 month period where every night I was putting on The Expanse, and it was ridiculous.
And you weren't just reading the books, like a fiend. You were also proselytizing on Twitter,
And
which
in
is
my
how you
real
hooked
life.
me.
Yes.
Which is how you hooked me. And I mean, you had me at space drama, and then you mentioned all the great women characters and the great just how brown the cast was.
Can we talk? Let's just
Talk
start
about
there.
it.
Let's just start there.
Yes.
So in the main, the entire series revolves around the crew of the Rocinante, and there are ostensibly, although put an asterisk in that, two brown characters, two white characters. And I was just like, I can't even think of how many shows who were like the heart of the show is just not like overwhelmingly white with one brown person or something like that. It's literally just like, no, we're going to split this half and half, right? Which I really like. But then when you kind of stretch out from there, like the next sort of most important character is a white man. I can't stand him. We can get to that. But then outside of him, there are probably most of the characters are people of color. So like there's Ava Sorala, who's a South Asian woman who everyone loves for the most part. There's Fred Johnson, who's the love of my
Yes.
life. I love him so much.
We need to talk about that.
And yeah, and the really cool thing is having read the books, I know how many more characters are coming, and most of the ones that I'm looking forward to, not all, but most of them are people of color. It's wild. And now there's Bobby in season two. Come on. Come on.
And you don't have to worry. The thing is, you don't have to worry about whitewashing with this show.
Actually, they have done it once.
Oh yeah, they did it with a minor character in the first season too.
Yeah.
But I just have a f I don't worry as much about whitewashing with this show
Yeah.
because they've been so great about the cast so far.
Yeah. And I in my mind I balance off that one case of, well, is there more than one? Do you know of another one they whitewashed?
All I remember is Ade
Yeah, that's the only
in
one.
the
Okay.
text is clearly Nigerian.
Clearly Nigerian.
Clearly,
From
from
her
her name
name to
to
the
her accent.
description, she, yeah, there's another character who I think is also Nigerian, and if they whitewash her, I will actually burn everything down because I had a fan cast in my head the whole time I was reading that book. But anyway, yeah, I balanced that out, that case of whitewashing with they actually made a white character, a book. Well, she's an amalgamation, but a white character in their book, they made a woman of color. So Mus, Miller's partner. Well, his other, actually both of his partners. Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, I think they made them both people of color, and in the books they're white.
Okay.
So Havelock and Mus are I'm about it.
So let's just get into let's introduce people to some of the main characters. Christian Avasarala.
is the UN head. Well, she's not the head, actually. She's actually has, I don't think they ever explain this in the show, but in the book, she's actually kind of like a minor character who's amazing because it's a position that has a lot of power, but doesn't give her a whole bunch of responsibility so that she can kind of do what she wants in sort of serving the UN. So she's a really important politician, but not the most important politician, which allows her to be really sneaky and like underhanded and like do all these backwater deals that get stuff done.
And she definitely does all of that. Yes. And but she looks so fly when she does it.
We have
to get into the saris.
She wears a different sari every episode. And it's
almost every scene, though.
Probably. And it's so just like everyone else is in like a boring suit or like a military uniform. And she'll walk in these like really beautiful, often brightly colored saris. And I love the sort of juxtaposition of that because I think the idea is supposed to be that she kind of looks like a sort of unassuming, you know, woman, right? Who doesn't have much power and isn't going to be too much of a fuss. And she's a grandmother. So I think there's like this idea that the presentation is supposed to put people at ease. And then in the book, she cusses like a fucking sailor.
You know, Shara is just chomping at the bit to do that.
No, actually, she doesn't want to do it.
What? She doesn't want to cuss in the show?
She doesn't like to cuss. She only cusses one time in the first season, and she says fuck, and they had to, like, I think they ended up, there's a good featurette or whatever you can find online where they talk about that scene, because they can't curse too much at sci-fi, but then also she doesn't want to curse too much because she thinks it's impolite. So they had to, like, I don't remember how many times they said they made her say fuck until they got the sort of right kind of balance in her voice. She's cursing more this season, but last season she was definitely just like, oh no, which is so cute.
Especially when, you know, any other time, sure is. She'll cuss when she wants to, but okay. Anyways, if you haven't noticed, we're talking about Shara Agdashloo. You may have seen her on 24. You may have seen her in motion pictures. She's a great Iranian actress, I believe. She plays Christian Avasarala with aplomb. And she's one of my favorite characters. Another one of my favorite characters is Miss Naomi Nagata, played by Dominic Tipper. Please call me. talk about Naomi, please.
Okay, so to explain Naomi, she's usually the character I start with because she is actually my favorite. You have to like explain like the world of The Expanse. So in the sort of world, there's like Earthers, obviously, and then Martians, you know, people who have colonized Mars, and then Belters, and Naomi's a Belter. And so Belters are people who grow up on like space stations in zero gravity. And so they're also, because of that, really dependent on sort of these really tenuous relationships with Mars and Earth, where they're essentially exploited. It's like the third world of space. And she's just like really fascinating character that I think they're really doing a good job of sort of dribbling little bits and pieces of, you know, her backstory and her character into the show. And they're bringing some stuff forward a little earlier and whatever. But she's kind of like the smartest person in the room. And she's not even kind of, she is the smartest person in the room, no matter what room she's in, what ship she's on. She's smart and capable, but still vulnerable and fun. So like everyone around her tends to be really serious. And she can be too, but she's also, she's been through so much. And so she could be really like sort of brooding like another character, but she just isn't. She's like full of life and I love her. And she's not afraid to say what she thinks and call people out. And there's this great line in the first season where she says, I forget who it was, but someone is underestimating her ability to break stuff. And I was like, yep, we're here.
And the Belters are kind of nomadic in that they go from job to job. And they do a lot of the heavy lifting in this universe. They do a lot of the grunt work. And they're also represented by an organization called OPA. Thank you. But the OPA is split into so many different separate smaller factions, of people who may or may not actually care about Belters and may just be going after their own self-interest. So it's hard to figure out, who to trust within that organization. And then, of course, Earthers don't trust Belters or Martians, and Martians don't trust Earthers or Belters. And it's just a whole bunch of, it's just mess. So.
Well, but like I really like the OPA because I think the really interesting thing in the books is that there's sort of like a one-dimensional depiction of them early, where they just seem like maybe like a step above a street gang, or just a collection of street gangs. But I think in one of the kind of middle books, they talk about how like Belter's identities are shaped by having lived on space stations and ships, where like crew is family, and where like safety, like literal safety on the ship or the space station is tantamount to like their existence. And I love that because even though you're right, you can't really trust like someone in the OPA, or you don't know if you can trust them. I think the thing that actually isn't true is that they don't really care about Belters. They do care about Belters, but they don't agree with the best way possible. So there's like this great, I'm teaching a civil rights Black Power course, and my students and I keep talking about like reform versus revolution movements. And I think you can kind of see that in the OPA, because there are some people who are trying to work within a system and legitimize themselves as political power. And then there are other people who are like, fuck that, burn all this shit down, because they don't treat us like humans and we deserve equality and whatever. So it's totally more nuanced, and I think they're gonna, well, they kind of have to bring that out over time.
Do you think we're going to see that conflict between Naomi and Fred? Please say yes. Please say
No. I think,
Oh.
don't worry though, I think, so I told you, so when we were talking about this, I told Didi that they're changing some stuff, and I think they're gonna show that conflict in a way that's not in the book between Naomi and Holden, or at least it's not in the books this early between Naomi and Holden. But there is a conflict also between Fred and Anderson Dawes, who's another interesting character.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So I feel like in the books, I don't know if this will change though, so this might totally be something different, but I think in the books, Naomi and Fred never really have like a friendship, but there's kind of like a grudging respect. And I think they're gonna, it seems as if they're gonna keep that kind of in the show. And I love it because two of my favorite characters getting along. Thank you. And they're two Black characters. Give me all of that.
So, okay, since you mentioned Holden, I guess we have to bring him up.
I guess we have to, if you say so.
As you can tell, he's not one of my favorites, but James Holden is, as played by Stephen
Steven
Strait,
Strait,
who is very
who
pale.
I did not know before the show.
I didn't either. I think he's probably been in something I've seen before, but I just don't remember him. But anyway, this character, James Holden, he's pretty much the protagonist of the first season and the first book.
All of them.
Because the book, the way that, really?
All of them. He's literally the protagonist of the entire series. You're so sad.
Yes. You should have warned me about that first. See,
I thought you
first you get
realized
a book.
that. Yeah, that's what
All
I
I.
do.
I mean the first book is structured where it goes between back and forth between James Holden and Joe Miller's points of view. And I saw a video interview with James S.A. Corey that said that they structured most of the books like that, where it goes between two people's points of view, because it
actually
was
don't want to see it.
easier. Oh, really?
Which is what makes the rest of the books, I think, better, because I'll just say this, I can't stand Miller, and so the first book is like so annoying to me. But after that, you get way more POV characters. But Holden is the, I think, the only constant in all of the books.
Oh, so anyways, we haven't even introduced him and I've already shat on him. But James Holden is captain of the Rocinante. He used to be XO of the Canterbury before it got spoiler alert, blown to bits.
Two
And
bits.
two bits and everybody on it.
Like dust.
Ether. He's a good guy. He's naive as fuck. And sometimes he just doesn't think before he talks. He doesn't think about other people's points of view. He's just like, well, it should be this way, and we shouldn't have to pick a side. And you just want to shake him. But okay, I do.
Justice for Holden.
He's okay. You lead that movement. It's yours. But, people seem to realize he's a good guy at heart, but he's naive as fuck. And they're just waiting for life to shake him up a little bit, I guess.
Okay, so an
Go ahead.
actual introduction to this character. God.
Ooh.
No, I mean, I get it though. I know lots of people can't stand him. I feel like the sort of some of the distinction is if you like Holden, you probably don't like Miller, and maybe vice versa, or maybe you just love them both. I don't know. But my discerning group of TV watching friends, it's one or the other.
Okay.
Yeah, I gave you a compliment.
Okay. All right.
So, but for me, I think Miller, well, Holden is my preferred character. Maybe more so because I've read all the books, so I've seen his growth. But I do agree that in the first season, you're just like, oh, look, dumb decision number four. He's gonna make it. It's just super annoying. But Holden is an Earther. I feel like you gotta like sort of ground where everyone's from. Holden's an Earther. He is actually he has eight parents, I think.
Yes.
He's from a communal farm, and he has a it's a full genetic mix, so all of his parents' DNA is mixed was mixed to make him. And that matters because of just how Earth is structured at the time. So the his parents are actually a collection a coalition of various, relationships. Like I think there's a poly relationship, there's a gay relationship, gay male relationship, there's a heterosexual relationship. So there's a lot going on there. But they did that because having one child would get them like tax credits or something like that. And so, but he has no siblings, and so he eventually leaves his family to join the Earth Navy, and then I think he's just honorably discharged or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he becomes essentially a an ice hauler, just sort of jumping from ship to ship, for employment. And he, I think in the first episode, they do an okay job of sort of making clear that he's a bit of a mess. He doesn't want responsibility. He doesn't want really like a relationship necessarily. He kind of likes that he can just sort of float from here to there. And I think maybe some of that is because of how much responsibility he had as a kid. So.
Okay, so that's Holden. Should we talk about the other members of the Rocinante before we get to Bobby?
Do you want to talk about Miller? We did just like mention him
Okay,
a
okay.
bit.
Well, Joe Miller is played by Thomas Jane in the show, the former Punisher. And he is a cop, and in this universe, cops are hired by private organizations. So, there'll be a set of cops from this organization or another. They're like, how do I do it? It's like how
He's
it's
well,
like.
he there are different things. So he's a cop on Ceres Station, but the there are not their benefactors, but they're essentially employed by a company on Earth. And then there are like, so roving police units or security, that's their security units, sorry.
Yeah.
And they are usually funded by Earth or Mars, I think. And so he's a belter, but because he's security, he kind of has like divided loyalties. But he's also a really poor, or he was a really poor belter. So I think he's one of those characters who kind of hates who he is on a very serious level, which is why being a security agent, he has some divided loyalties, but also not a lot. So he kind of like, he wears a hat. Like belters would never wear a hat because of like, you know, zero G. And then also like, it's not going to rain. You know what I mean? It's like, so they sort of like depict him in a way where it's like he's a belter, but he's like rejecting so much of what makes belters unique. And his job is one of those ways.
But even though anybody can spot that he's a belter from a mile away.
Yeah.
Because he's so tall and thin, and they can, you know.
Yeah.
They can see the marks on his neck and his back and stuff like that. So. Yeah.
He's so, passing terribly, I guess, is the best way of saying
that. True. And he's sort of like the antithesis of Holden, in that he's not naive at all, very disillusioned, very just bitter, and he almost enjoys, you know, drawing out that bitterness in other people. I think there's a part in the first book where he saw some of Holden's naivete or hope kind of dying, and he kind of cheered inside about it. I'm like, oh god,
oh my god, I can't wait to read this book. That's rough.
Okay.
He's also an alcoholic, which I feel like if you're the kind of character, literally someone said to me, I like drunk, surly, mean, or not mean, but like cynical alcoholic cops. And I was like, wow, okay,
that's a lot. Yep.
I don't like, no, they, oh, I'm sorry. They weren't saying I like that kind of character, because I do not, but they were saying that that was their preferred type of character. And when they said that, I was like, you know what? You really do love that character. And I can totally see it now. I guess mine is the more hopeful optimist, which would explain why Holden is for me in terms of some of the dudes, but
mm-hmm.
Holden's not my favorite dude though. I have better taste than that.
Okay. Okay. Speaking of better dudes, Alex Kamal.
Yes!
Played by he of the lush beard, Mr. Cass Anvar.
Yes.
Beautiful beards. Beautiful beards.
Beautiful hair. Sometimes he has a little curl going on for interviews. Have you noticed that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, no. Go watch him. I can't handle it. I will send you pictures. He has, just the ends of his hair will curl a little bit, and it's a little longer on top. I'm closing my eyes and visualizing it right now because it's so beautiful.
Anyway. Okay. Alex is the pilot on the Rocinante. He's had military training from Mars in the Martian Navy. So he trusts Martians more than anybody else on the ship. And, He has a complex about saving people. He wants to save as many people as he can. At least the Alex that we've seen on the show.
Yeah, which I think is kind of like a new dimension. Like, I remember when I saw that kind of unfolding, and I was like, oh, I don't remember that from the book at all. But I love it because it does kind of fit who he is. But yeah, he's a Navy pilot. Was he Navy, though? But he's Martian. I thought he was something else.
He might have been in the Army. He might have been Martian Army, but he is definitely Martian military.
Yeah, cool, because he and Bobby aren't from the same branch of the Martian forces.
Okay.
So, but anyway, yeah, he's like a pilot. He's also a little bit older than everyone else, which they don't do a good job of showing because they all kind of look lovely. But if you notice that Alex has a little bit of a stomach, that's padding. Which makes me kind of sad because it's cute.
Aww.
Yeah, because he's supposed to be like a kind of older pilot who's, had better days. He's still a great pilot, but he's a little out of shape, a little older. His joints are a little creaky or whatever. So, Cass, the actor who plays Alex, is a little sad that they have to give him a fake gut.
Sad about
Yeah, oh, he's so mad.
What does he want to grow the gut naturally? Does he
No.
want the pouch organically?
Well, no, he wants to, like, because they've shown like Holden's abs, and every season has a little butt shot from him, and Amos is like really fit or whatever, and so Cass is like, why can't I? I'm assuming, why can't I be like a little sex symbol?
I
But
want to
he
flex,
is.
yeah.
Yeah, he just wants to, he wants everyone to think he's fine.
It's already thought. We got you, Cass.
Man.
So now Amos, played by Wes Cheatham, may or may not have something going on in the space uniform.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to jump in right here and say. If you are thinking of reading The Expanse, I kind of would recommend that you, just to sort of see what the world is like, read the novella called The Churn, which is about Amos's life before on Earth, because he's an Earther.
Isn't he from like
It is,
Baltimore?
yeah, he's from Baltimore. It is wild. It's such a well-written short story, but that one is just absolutely wild. His entire backstory is crazy. And so he's like, I think there's some discussion about if he's a sociopath or not, and all of that. But he's like the coolest character. And as I said, it's his relationship with Naomi that like got me watching the show. And it's one of my favorite things in the book. Although all of their relationships with everyone on the Rosie and then other people, like those relationships are good too. But like Amos and Naomi are so pure. She's such a like just good person, or she wants to be good, and he's just like, so I will throw his ass out an airlock if you tell me to. And then we will go have dinner. I don't really know what else to say.
I mean, if he were really a sociopath, he wouldn't really think that he was missing something. He wouldn't follow Naomi as much as he would, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know anything. Sometimes I hate when I listen to like true crime stuff and they're like, he's a sociopath, he's a psychopath, and I'm like, where is your degree? So I'm just gonna say this right now. I don't know anything about the intricacies of those diagnoses. I don't know. I'm not gonna pretend. And I don't know what the authors necessarily intend. They've kept some of that kind of like vague. But I will say, in terms of like him following Naomi, like part of the reason I love The Churn as a story is because it's really the first time in the series chronologically that you get any understanding of like his the way that he thinks. And he understands that there are some things he's good at, like the physical, the like, brutal stuff, he can do that. He doesn't feel necessarily bad about it. It doesn't make him feel good, but he can do it. And then there are other things he cannot do, like the emotional stuff he can't really do. And he realizes really early that he really can't decide between right and wrong. And so he chooses to follow someone who seems to know that distinction and seems to, and it's not entirely selfish, right? So, like, he works for gangs in Baltimore, but he like knows like my boss is not a good guy, but he knows what the hell he's doing, right? And so he kind of like imprints on Naomi because she's a good person, she's always so sure, and her decisions about right or wrong are not about or solely about herself. So yeah, which is why also then eventually Holden grows on him, because naive or not, Holden is like inherently optimistic, and he's one of those people who thinks that like at its core, humanity is good, whatever. So, I don't know how that fits or does not fit, like the idea of him being a sociopath, but it's actually one of my favorite things about him because it's so unambiguous. He knows his strengths, he knows his weaknesses, he wants to do good, And so he's going to stick with the people that will allow him to do that.
Yeah, well, I have an old psych degree I'm not really using, so I'm just going to go ahead and
get into it.
Yeah, put 20 down on him not being a sociopath.
What do you think?
I don't know how I would diagnose him, but yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Okay. I'm going to stay tuned to this, though, as you read the book, because I really want to know. Because I think people just throw around sociopath because it's the only thing they know.
Yeah.
And that annoys me.
Because somebody with that kind of disorder wouldn't care.
Okay.
They just wouldn't care. They don't have that. Yeah, they don't have that empathy. All right. So we've talked about Miller. We've talked about all of the Rosinante. Mm-hmm. Bobby Draper.
Your other girl crush? You're really excited about her.
Bobby! Anyway. So many girl crushes on this show.
Oh my God, so many.
So Bobby was just introduced this season. She's played by Frankie Adams, who is an Indigenous actress. And we're going to get into how brilliant the casting director is, whoever they are, later. But Bobby is a Martian soldier. Is she Navy or Army? She's Army, right?
I think she's Army. No, wait. She's Navy. Alex was Army.
Okay.
Because someone was,
okay, thank you.
Someone was complaining about her being called a soldier. And I was like, shut up, dude. But all right. So she's Navy.
Okay, so she's in the Martian Navy. Her dream is just to have Mars terraformed. That's how we're first introduced to her.
Yeah,
you know, after bullets have flown and bombs have dropped, and there's this big skirmish on the planet, and her soldiers barely get away. She takes one look back and imagines Mars. You know, at a green Mars with plants and water and, you know, and so that's what she wants above all else. She seems to think that they need to fight Earth to get to that place, because she thinks that war with Earth is what's keeping Mars from being terraformed.
So, I'm going to be so happy when you start this book, because you're going to love her in the books even more than you love her on the show.
Okay.
Again, you got to have like a little bit of backstory to understand her character. So when Earth colonizes or begins to colonize the planets surrounding, you know, in this universe or whatever, galaxy? I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Mars is like every other planet. Except I think there's like a really strong streak in Mars that wants to like sort of get free of like Earth shackles. And so in the most recent episode, they have that flashback to Epstein, who created the drive that allows people to travel around the solar system, etc. And he's working on Mars. And because of that drive, it allows Mars to become independent from Earth. So Earth and Mars are totally separate factions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the sort of drive that had been pushing Mars, you know, while they were a colony, to terraform becomes like the overwhelming definition of Martians' identities, right? So and Bobby is like the best case, or not the perfect example of that. Like her dream is, you know, not to get married, not to have kids. I mean, I don't know if she wants those things, but they would all pale in comparison to wanting to see a Mars that has like lush grass and like rivers and stuff. And so the whole thing about like wanting to fight Earth is also wanting to put Mars in a place where they aren't having to like look over their shoulder about what Earth is doing. Because every Martian, whether they're in the Army or the Navy, or they're like freaking breaking baking bread in like, you know, like a small village, they want to see Mars become essentially Earth, you know, in the sense of it being like the center of the universe. So.
Interesting. So, yeah. Oh, I forgot to say about Amos. It looks like we're finally, if you've seen this, the little sneak peek for the next episode, it looks like we're finally going to get into some Amos backstory.
Hey.
We might see some of the churn show up on the
I'm
show.
so excited. Oh wait, I forgot to say before we get into like Bobby's character too. One of Holden's fathers is from West Africa. So technically, if you want to stretch that to the one drop rule, which I'm gonna do in this case, there's only one white person on the entire Rocinante. Goodbye.
At ex recluse for all your debate.
No.
But she gonna hit you with pictures and facts and
I'm
quotes
just gonna
from
hit you with
the
page numbers. we're gonna talk about his conversations. We're gonna talk about Stephen Strait's lips and hair. Like, I will do it. I will do it.
We're gonna talk about how he's only ever dated black women. Anyway,
Thank you. Thank you.
because Ade is black in the book. Fight me.
Thank you.
Anyway.
At Dust Daughter.
On. I'll hit you with some page numbers too. Let me look them up on my Kindle. It'll take me a minute. I will find them.
My gosh. Please, you can Google that. People were actually kind of mad about that.
We'll get to that too.
Oh,
Fucking fandom. But one more character I want to
no,
talk
Bobby,
about.
the casting.
Yes, we're gonna get to that too. I just want to talk about one more character, and that is your beloved friend, Lucius Johnson.
First of all, his middle name is Lucius, which lets you know that 300 years in the future, colonies in the universe, black people still ain't shit. And they would name you after your great uncle who had two wives, 16 kids, a mistress, and drove a Cadillac. That's how you know black people are amazing.
In space,
In space, there is a Lucius in space.
and you know he had a Crown Royal bag on his ship.
Ma'am, ma'am. Love of my life. I'm gonna marry his old ass. Goodbye.
Fred Lucius Johnson is played by Chad Coleman, formerly of The Walking Dead, formerly of The Wire, good ass actor.
Fine ass man.
Fred, huh?
Fine ass man. Don't discount him. At ex recluse. Try me. Try me. With his little 1960s afro and his facial hair. Don't play with me.
With
or
the with
dark
that, no,
chocolate
he
skin.
rocking the S, he rocking the S curl. Anyway,
Rude.
Fred runs Tycho Station. He's a leader in the OPA. He's also known as the Butcher of Anderson Station, and has his own novella named after him.
Which is
But,
my second favorite. Read it.
but. It's hard to track his motives most of the time. He's a cipher to me. But he's fascinating
Yes.
because of that. Do you have anything else you want to say about him
I'm sorry.
besides call me?
Well, no. Shit. Okay, so part of the reason I love Fred is because he is one of those characters who it's always hard to decipher their motives. So he was formerly a high-ranked colonel in the Earther Army, and he gets that nickname because there's a station, Anderson Station, that's essentially striking, and he kills everyone on the station. And there's a whole bunch of like messy stuff. I don't want to sort of give that away, but there's a whole bunch of messy stuff around that operation that essentially leads him to leave the army. And then again, I don't want to give too much away. He leaves the army and eventually ends up in the OPA, and he is actually one of the highest ranking people now in the OPA. And so you can imagine that switch between being, you know, like an army man, you know, undivided loyalties for his home planet, and now essentially leading like a militant organization against all those people that he served before. But part of the reason why it's hard to kind of figure him out is because he's an Earther in a Belter organization. And so people trust him who don't maybe want to trust him. And the people who maybe are likely to trust him kind of can't because he left the army. And so, yeah, so he's really walking this kind of fine line. And I think I've been a little unhappy with the portrayal. Like, I think sometimes, like, he's supposed to be this really imposing figure who can bring people to him even if they are reticent. And I don't see as much of that in the writing. I think Chad Coleman does a great job of representing that. But it's been one of my issues is that there are people who should be kind of awed by him, even if they dislike him, who kind of aren't. And he seems a little weaker in ways that he wasn't in the book, and that made sense. And so I don't know where they're going with that, but I literally was going to slap Holden for the way that he was talking to Fred in this last episode, and I will do so in the future if need be.
Got you back on that. But Fred is really smart, and he can play chess with the best of them. Mm. Even finds himself, you know, playing, you know, forming a tenuous alliance with Avasarala. I love watching him and trying to figure out what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
Cause you know, it's leading to something. It's just like a move in the chess game, and he has the whole strategy figured out. And I just wish I knew I was in on what the strategy was.
And it's amazing to think that they're both playing this chess game with, but also against each other. It's amazing.
True. They don't trust each other. Yeah.
Not even.
So those are the main characters of the Expanse universe. Very diverse universe. And that is thanks to the casting. There's a great article in IndieWire earlier in February that talked about how Sci-Fi cast fan favorite Bobby Draper. The article was...
Is that the one that's like The Impossible?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the... what is the name of it?
Something like casting. Oh, okay, go ahead.
How the Sci-Fi series found the unfindable actress, which means other shows can too. I love that little bit of...
So much shade.
Yes.
It's like, I'm at y'all drive.
Basically, y'all could have been did this. Right. So... like we said before, Bobby is played by an indigenous actress named Frankie Adams. She's played by a Samoan actress named Frankie Adams. And there's a great, I'm going to put this in the syllabus, where they talk about casting her and casting Dominic Tipper, and the casting directors read the book and they made it a priority to cast someone who matched the book's description. They said, so I'm reading that from the article. The key priority for them was finding someone who matched the book's description to a T. Quote, someone who is of Polynesian descent or looks Polynesian and 6 feet tall and can have this strength and then also this vulnerability behind it, in Ospie's words. And this is Hawk Ospie, who is one of the TV show creators and one of the executive producers. So, and they also took extra time to cast this role. So they said they were prepared to scour the earth to find the right Bobby.
So this is, go ahead, sorry.
So this work involved casting directors Robin Cook in Canada, Julie Tucker and her team in New York, and Liz Mullane, who was in New Zealand. And it was Mullane in New Zealand who actually brought Frankie Adams to their attention. So Frankie Adams is New Zealand, is from New Zealand and of Samoan heritage. She didn't have very many credits to her name, but
She's like a kickboxer or something, right? Right.
yes, yes, she's a she had years of training as a boxer. They sent a tape to Ty Frank, who is one of the authors under the si the book's authors under the synonym the pseudonym James S.A. Corey. They sent him a tape of Adams, and he was the one that, gave the thumbs up. So, it was a lot. They did an extensive amount of work, but it paid off. Oh my gosh. They said Adams reached via phone just before the show's premiere, said that when she found out she got the part, she screamed in excitement, as not only was she excited to play a character with her same ethnic background, something that rarely happens for her, but the character of Bobby met at least a few of the things she looks for in a role. Do I agree with the things she does? Yes or no? Would I get a crush on this woman? Yes or no? End quote. So she was concerned that she wasn't muscular enough, even though she was the height they were looking for. So she started training right away. So it just shows you can do it. If you're willing to put the time and the work in, you can do it. And it just
I gotta say
it
though, this is
go ahead.
something like I don't have many connections with the fandom outside of Tumblr, but this was one of the roles that like everyone was kind of like holding their breath, like waiting for them to cast because like Bobby's a fan favorite in the series, obviously. I mean, my God. But it was one of those things where if you read the books, and the authors have said this, that when they think of their POV characters, they try and balance as much as they can race and gender. So if they have two male POV characters, then the other two have to be female. And they really spend a lot of time in their world bending thinking about like the racial mixture that space would be, and so not putting forth just as many white characters as possible. And I feel like after like the second or third book, like most of the new characters tend to be people of color, which I think reflects in the authors. I feel like they've said this, if not, they clearly know it. Most of the world is not white. So why in the hell would we necessarily recreate that in space when people are at a premium, right? So, Bobby was one of those characters that for me, I was like, I have never read a character like her, ever. And I love that, like in the book, she's like physically imposing, on her own, and then put her in armor, and it's literally terrifying. And I was just like waiting. I was like, oh my God, if they honestly, if they fuck this up, I'll be so mad. And when I saw Frankie, I was like, yep. And even though in my mind, to be real with you, Bobby was actually bigger, like not just muscular, but bigger. What black people say, big boned, because that's kind of how they describe her. And they talk a lot about how Polynesian women are just bigger, right? They're curvier, taller, whatever. And I was like, fuck yeah, like give me that kind of body type. And Frankie is a little smaller than I imagined, but I just love hearing that she was like, nope, I'm going to put on some more muscle and really try and approximate like what they're talking about. So I love it.
They knew they couldn't fuck this up. So that's why they took the extra time and multiple locations. They knew they couldn't fuck this up. But I just hope that it shines a light. I mean, with them, with, you know, Queen Sugar having all women and mostly women of color directors. I mean, it's shining a light on, you know, the big studios and the big TV shows that just don't know how to do this kind of stuff when they have all so many more resources than these small TV shows.
I don't think it's that they don't know how. I think it's that they don't care.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. But they're getting exposed. Oh, they're getting exposed regardless.
Because I think the really big thing, the distinction between like the two shows you named and like whatever the fuck CBS is airing, is essentially that they wanted to, like, Ava DuVernay wanted to have all female directors, and so she did it. It wasn't like, oh, how can we get this done? She was literally just like, find me all female directors. And it was like, oh, here's like a list of people. Oh my God, it's amazing. There are so many of them. We're choosing from so many more options.
Basically, a whole bunch of directors she ran into on festival tours and shit like that.
So this is what I'm saying, right? It's not like it's that hard.
And then it's not.
And then with The Expanse, I think, like, in my mind, I imagine that they were just like, there's no way in fucking hell you're going to whitewash all these characters. Like, the authors are like, you're not going to whitewash all these characters, so y'all better get to step in. Like, y'all better do your job. Like, get out here, send out some damn scouts. Like, do whatever needs to happen. Because there are literally characters that I'm sitting here thinking, it matters that these characters are people of color. And it's not, you know, the usual what we do is like, what if like this character was black? Like, would you still have this criticism, or would you still agree with them? Would you still woobify them? Whatever. But it's literally like, it matters that the main love interest of this entire fucking series is a mixed race black woman, right? That fucking matters, right? It matters that Ava Sarala, like a South Asian woman, is in the character. I know Shuri's different, but it matters that she's essentially the representative of Earth. It matters that the representative of the OPA, at least for a time, is a black man. It matters, some characters coming up, that they are Asian. They're doing a lot to really think about how the like manufactured white world that we get in all these other shows is manufactured. Like, you have to strive to get a world like as white as Friends. Like, you really do, Riverdale.
Shit, even Battlestar Galactica was not as diverse as The Expanse.
Girl.
And they love to compare the two, but this is why I say The Expanse is way better.
And when you think about like a show like Battlestar Galactica, most of those characters of color were marginal.
Yeah. Yeah. When Duwala got married to the Admiral's son, she was still the side piece to his actual side piece. Anyway, oh God, don't, you bringing up bad memories. Let me stop.
But this is what I'm saying. Like, we don't really have that here. Because it's just more complicated. And you're not... So I think I talked about this on Twitter like a couple weeks ago. But I watched three groups of fandoms essentially worry that the black female character on that show, whatever show it was... I know the shows. But it was... So let me call them out.
Sleepy Hollow.
No, that already happened. The Walking Dead... Vampire Diaries and Black Sails. Fans in those three fandoms were worried that the black female character was going to get killed before the show was over. And I'm sitting here just like, ugh, how disgusting. And then I'm just like running back to The Expanse like, I ain't got that problem. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's happening on The Flash too, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. That was the other one. Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you always have to worry in mainstream media when a black woman finally becomes, a protagonist or a main love interest or stuff like that.
Yep.
You always have to worry, which sucks.
Unless you're watching The Expanse.
Yes. Cue the theme song. But so getting into, so we've talked a little bit about the casting. So now let's talk about the fandom since we've been circling around it. Like you said, there's a little bit of a presence on Tumblr. It seems to be more stuff popping on Twitter just because the writers and the cast sometimes live tweet, don't they? And you also are best friends with the writers now, on Twitter.
This is fake news.
facts.
They do follow me on Twitter, but they've done a really good job of following fans, which I even just like the idea of that.
Yeah, that's sweet. There's a handful of fan podcasts of varying degrees of quality.
Thanks.
There's also, but now there's an official podcast called The Churn, that comes from Sci-Fi and includes many of the actors and
The
the
authors are on
writers.
every, yeah, they're on every week.
Some of the actors are on AfterBuzz too, but you don't want me to get into my AfterBuzz rant right here. You don't.
That's inaccurate. Go on ahead. Before she does, you can tweet her at does. I'm just
No. See, that's exactly why we're not going to do it. Anyway,
No, I just
several
I don't watch
cast
the
members.
I don't b bother with AfterBuzz. They kind of suck. And
Yeah.
they
Well.
also really dislike black female characters. So
Well,
what?
you thank you for
Tell me I'm
saying it,
wrong.
and you no, you're not, which is why I'm thanking you for saying it in a lot less words than I would have. But anyway, Cass has been on AfterBuzz. I think Dominique Tipper has been on AfterBuzz, talking about one of the recent episodes. So they find a way to pull in some of these actors, but most of the people on that network don't really care about the shows they cover. They care about getting their Twitter and Instagram and social media links out there. I feel like they're being told, they're being asked to do these shows for exposure.
Well, I'm glad they think the Expanse can get them exposure.
Anyway, so that's
Fandom.
some of my issues with AfterBuzz, but they have fan podcasts.
They get
They have a
really
Twitter.
great weekly reviews too. So some of them are mainstream, some of them are fan too.
Yeah, I know the Verge.com does a weekly review. I think IO9 does a weekly review. So yeah, more people are realizing that this is the shit, and they need to start covering it, which is
Can
good.
we call this episode Renew the Expanse? Because I'm just gonna say it. So I heard that their ratings were slipping a little bit, and as I have said on Twitter, I am unprepared for a world without the Expanse.
No.
So yeah, I'm a little sad.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's fine because another aspect of the show that we haven't talked about is how much I'm so glad that it's happening now and that we're watching it now because it's so relevant to
Oh,
what we're dealing
yeah.
with Toupé Fiasco over here. So
Agent
many little
Orange.
different Agent Orange, that too.
Agent Orange. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
it's like every week there's an element or of the show that invites discussion of just current politics, current news, because the tensions between Earth and Mars and the Belters, they mimic the tensions between groups of people, even in the U.S. alone, not to mention, you know, other countries like the U.K., Russia. Go ahead.
This seems like a good time to mention that, like, an underpinning of the show is, like, the history of colonialism.
Mm.
And so, and that's not even hidden at all. And I don't know if the authors have talked about that, but it's, you don't have to, like, have done any research on how, to know how colonialism worked to see this. Like, even in, like, the setup, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that all of these colonial themes and these imperial themes have such a resonance now, they always kind of do the sort of politicking of, you know, these tense relationships are always, are super contemporary and historical. But yeah, you're right. In, you know, this world that we're living, it's like really easy to see how all of these big and small things that are happening domestically and with foreign relations, I mean, I'm the Homer Simpson gif of him walking around with a bell and a sign that says the end is near. That's my mood forever. And like this show just sort of underpins. It's like, yeah, that's going to happen. That's probably going to happen again.
Yep. Oh,
I'm probably not going to survive that.
Nobody's learning from history. Nobody's paying attention to history.
I don't even care about it. No, I'm joking.
Look at you.
But you're right. But, it is totally, it like resonates on a lot of really terrifying levels.
Yeah. So that's why, yes, please renew The Expanse. We need this show because I don't think there's no other show out here that's really dealing with these sorts of issues. I mean, you'll get the occasional special episode on Blackish, and those are all good and fine. They're not tackling colonialism on Blackish. They're not talking about this on a lot of the other shows that are popular today, but we do get to talk. Get an opportunity to explore this on The Expanse.
There is a later book that deals a lot with military corruption that maybe all of y'all should read as a primer. But I don't want to, I'm just saying.
There's a book in this series?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's Sybil LaBerne, which is book number, what, 4?
4?
It deals a lot. It's that one is the theme. I mean, all the theme is colonialism, but that one in particular also has a theme. At least I read it as the Wild Wild West. And so thinking about these spaces that are beyond borders and sort of the lawlessness that can sort of exist there, but also like what happens when you try and impose law on a new place, and because it's space, like, and that place is hostile. So that's actually one of my favorite books, although I like them all.
So just some random things that popped up. Just want to discuss them before we close out. I was chatting with you on Twitter, and I was too lazy to type out Jules Pierre Mao's name. So I just typed his initials.
Wait, we haven't talked about the proto-molecule, though.
Oh.
How do we miss that?
Which is kind of like the premise of the show.
Yeah. I have to say, though, it actually would make sense for me to skip it, because some of the science stuff, I like, in terms of the proto-molecule, I don't care about. I much more care about, like, the space travel and the people. So, whatever. Yeah. But the proto-molecule is literally important.
It's kind of like their raison d'etre right now. Okay, so the premise of this show, But you probably should have started. I'm terrible host.
The premise of the show. You did say you wanted this show to be like when I was out here proselytizing, and the proto molecule mm-hmm. is not a good point. It's not like for how you to proselytize. Yeah. I fish in other ways.
Yes. In other streams. Okay. So the premise of the show is basically, well, we told you how Earth and Mars and the Belters get down. So there's this ship called the Canterbury, nicknamed the Cant, that's full of, yeah, it's a mix. There's Earthers and Belters there and Martians, because all of the members of the Rocinante first met on the Canterbury. So it's this old ship, ice hauling ship, it intercepts a message from
a distress
call. A distress call from a Martian ship. And they at first don't want to check it out because that will slow them down from delivering the ice haul and basically fuck up the money. So mm-hmm. So they're like, you know, all in favor of forgetting this even happened, say aye. And everybody was like, aye. And then naive ass Holden.
Don't give this away.
Oh, I'm sorry. He disagrees. We'll just say he disagrees. Anyways, later on, they send a small group to investigate the distress call that ends up becoming the crew of the Rocinante. And they, along with Miller, who is investigating a kidnap case for Jules Pierre Mao, who is looking for his missing daughter,
Julie
Mao. They discover the existence of this protomolecule, which is basically a bioweapon that learns from feeding off of living human tissue.
It's actually an alien.
Yes, it's thing. It's extrasolar. So they is don't, what Naomi calls it.
Yeah, which means that it's from aliens, and they don't yes. know. They don't know what it does. So,
but they do know that it learns.
Well, that's after testing, and so they want to figure out. A collection of like capitalists who are being represented by Jules Pierre Mao, who fund this research to figure out what it does, because they want to use it as a weapon because humans are always garbage no matter when and where we are. And title of my forthcoming book. And so to figure out what it does, they are experimenting on it, and so the distress call kind of puts the Canterbury and then later the crew of the Rocinante like right in the middle of this weird situation that's really all about the protomolecule, but they don't know that at first.
But so that's how the protomolecule figures into the premise of the show and the story of the show. And it's how we meet Jules Pierre Mao, who is terrible. And I was too lazy to type out his name because he's terrible. And so I noticed that his initials are the same as J.P. Morgan's. And I was wondering if that was something slick that the writers were trying to do to have us connect these two in our minds. Because Jules Pierre is very... he's ruthless in his pursuit of this proto molecule and finding out what it can do and how he can use it to make more money and stuff like that. And he sacrificed people that he supposedly loved for it.
Yeah.
I was a big girl. I was about to spoil it all. So basically you're going to learn, through the course of this story that he's trash.
Got it.
So that's one of the things I was, wondering kind of hit me.
I think
just it's from being lazy and,
but go it's ahead. Such like a really good observation because, when I teach my students about like the second industrial revolution and like these large industrialists, like, they're used to this really triumphant narrative about these people, right? Which is that like their innovation like led to all of these new things and they accumulated all of this wealth. And so they must be good, right? Like in a capitalist society, if you can succeed, you must be good. Mm-hmm. And I point out to them, okay, well, they succeed at what cost? And so what we then look at is like, what are labor laws or the lack thereof? Like, what are labor conditions like? How are like everyday people, how do workers live? And when you think about it, I don't know if this was their intention at all, but if you really think about like Jules Pierre Mao and his storyline and then Julie's storyline as like the sort of important theme of the first, her, especially the important theme of the first series and the first book, like, it's a really great way of showing that dichotomy. Like, you know, I don't know how, like, you know, some in the universe, someone would write the history of Jules Pierre Mao, like, before, you know, what happens to him later. But because he accumulates all this wealth and power, like, realistically, history was probably going to be really kind to him, even though he, as you said, sacrificed people that were really important to him, if it was in the name of innovation and discovery. I mean, think of all the people that we have until the past 20 or 30 years revered for that. Columbus, like, it was totally revered, not because he was a good person. Hell, not even because he was particularly smart, but because, like, his accidental discovery led to all of these other things, right? Mind you, the people he killed, the people who he helped to be killed, the slave trade, the, you know, decimation of indigenous groups, like, we, for, you know, hundreds of years just brushed that aside. Because he was innovative. No, he just didn't know how to read a goddamn map. But we've forgotten that.
What is that saying? History is written by the victors.
100%.
So, speaking of innovation, Solomon Epstein created the Epstein Drive. And we saw in the most recent episode called Paradigm Shift, I think it's episode 26, where we saw him actually, you know, test out the Epstein Drive with results. And
that was good. That was really big. I liked it.
It's hard. It's hard for me not to do that. And I can't help but wonder if Epstein's wife modified the Epstein Drive so that it includes that juice that Alex uses on the Ross Sea and, you know, that Martians used on their ships to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really think that she did that since Kat told me in the books that Epstein's wife is also a scientist.
Yes.
Which is something that was not that didn't transfer over to the show.
So the medication is essentially to because I don't know if they've ever said this in the show either, like exactly what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to allow you to your brain to function in high G. So as mm-hmm. they're speeding off to wherever the hell they go, like. As we see, it's not always great. And so the drugs are essentially just, they're supposed to amp up the function and then like protect them at the same time. So it like numbs them, but also amps up their concentration so that they can still do vital things.
Yeah. Like you saw Solomon, he couldn't move. He couldn't talk. He couldn't do anything while he was hurtling through space, but when the crew of the Rosai are on the juice, they can do that at a, they can do a minimum of that. They can talk a little bit. They can still, handle the controls in front of them. Even as they're, trying to follow rogue planets that are defying physics. But yeah, so I really think that Mrs. Epstein came through with the modifications that are still being used today. So I think this leads me to mention you told me that the show has diverged a little bit or a lot from the book so far. And I'm really interested, since I've only read the first book, I'm really interested in hearing more about how they've diverged and why you think they've done so early in the series.
Yeah. Okay, so I just want to say, if the writers happen to listen, these are not criticisms. I love you. Follow me on Twitter. But the point is that
At X Reckless.
right, at X Recluse. I already follow you. Sometimes I tweet you. It's fine. So there have been a few deviations, some minor, some I don't that I, some I think are going to snowball into huge things. Some I love like right off the bat. Some I'm like really wary about, but I think they did it for a few reasons. So the kind of like most basic one is that they have pulled characters into the story earlier than they are in the books. So like Bobby is in the first half of season two, which is technically finishing in some ways the storyline of the first book. Bobby's not in the first book at all. And the author said, I think on an episode of The Churn, that they did so because these characters are existing. They exist before they pop up in the books. And so they wanted to take that opportunity to show the audience like what like Bobby is doing during the events of the first book, or Avasarala, what she's doing before she canonically shows up. So things like that. And I actually love the idea of that because it gives you a little bit more time with characters. Like, not to spoil it, but like Bobby's crew is not at all really in the book because they essentially die quickly.
Not to spoil it. Okay.
They're
Go
like
ahead.
in the freaking book for like as actual characters, 20 pages. I don't even care. I don't, that's not even a spoiler. I guess it is. I don't know. But like the authors definitely are gonna follow me now. No.
No. We can take that out.
No, we're not. It matters. Or not. It doesn't really matter. But so there so by showing these so these characters who don't exist for long or who die early or whatever, they made me love some people who you just never see in the books at all, except for like as a memory or something like that. And I think that's actually genius. And it gives you, yeah, like a little bit more time with people that some of them I love a lot already in the books. And so it's like, look, we have this. I think they did the same thing with storylines. So there are some things about really all of them that you either only find out in like the novellas and short stories, and then or things you find out in some of the later books that become really important that I think they're like bringing stuff now. So like there's like a conflict brewing between Naomi and Holden, and that I really won't give away because I don't really know what the hell is happening. But to be real, but I think they're doing that to, I think, to foreshadow a storyline that's really important in a later season. And they do the same in season one with Naomi. There's this line that made no sense to me when she said it because and she doesn't say it in the books, and I could not for the life of me figure out why. And then when I got to the later books, I understood why. And so it was amazing for them to plant that little plot hole that if you haven't read the book, it doesn't matter. But now, like when you get there and you realize what she's asking and why she's asking for it, I was just like, oh, holy shit, you know? So I think they're doing a really good job of bringing some stuff from the later books, like sort of planting the seeds for that earlier. I think, though, they're also just changing or adjusting some people's characterization. So, like with Alex wanting to save people, I don't know that they ever really represented him that way in the books. And I like it. It's not even so far off from his characterization there, but it is a difference. Not that he's callous. He just, I think he just, as probably as, as a former soldier, I think he just understands that you lose people, because you can't always, you can't always protect everyone, right? But I love the idea that someone like Alex, who is one of my favorite characters in the book too, doesn't want to be okay with that. I mean, he's such a great character.
Maybe they're just doing it to highlight, maybe it's in counterpoint to Amos. I don't know.
Maybe, and they do, that would make sense because they do, Amos and Alex develop their own really good relationship, and that's something else they're bringing up earlier. Like, I don't think I really sort of got the hint of that until like the third or fourth book. And their foundation of that relationship is really that they're not Naomi and Holden, who are in a relationship and generally speaking, like really good people, etc. And so they're kind of like, okay, well, our captain, our XO, we're having sex. So there's just the two of us on this big ship to hang out. So they develop their own relationship. And I think that dichotomy is actually really important that Amos would not care, or he at least can move by that. He's not crippled by it. And then Alex, maybe would be.
Amos doesn't even want to hear about it. Remember, Alex was going on that big old speech? And Amos bribed a woman. He said he would buy her drinks
Excuse
if
me,
she listened
James F. and
to
Corey. I ship that. So if you want to bring
Bring
her
her
back, and
back.
actually, in this most recent episode, I was a little perturbed that she didn't pop up when Alex was telling his war story. I'm just letting you know that you missed an opportunity. Y'all probably ain't ever gonna follow me. It's okay. I love the show.
I'm just saying, there was one Asian lady he was sitting next to,
And then three white women,
and two,
or however many. Y'all
two
had
or three white
room.
women.
I even had the scene planned out. Let me let you know. They were rapt listening to his story, and then she popped up and was like, I was here first. And I was in my mind like, yes, you were. I already wrote the scene. I already wrote the scene. Y'all had an opportunity.
Get the fic ready.
Noted.
Give us a name so we can get this fic popping.
Let's do it.
Anyway,
Oh, there's one more
so
thing, and storyline that they're changing. And this is actually the reason I told you. This Naomi and Holden conflict, there is a conflict in the book, but I don't think they're setting up that conflict. I think they're setting up a different one relative to the OPA. And that kind of worries me because of where she goes. So I don't really know what they plan to do with all of the changes, but I actually really like it. Overall, because yeah, when you've read the books, there is, this, like, there's a way where you're like, I know what's happening. And so it's nice to kind of be surprised still.
So that's why you need to renew the expanse so we can see where all these seeds planted lead. We need to watch them bloom.
Naomi and Holden are my absolute favorite book couple right now. And they are lovely, and I need to see that on my screen. Sci-fi. Do it. Especially because y'all broke up my ship on Killjoys. You know what? Don't even have me go there. The point is, the Expanse is wonderful.
Oh
Did you watch
yeah, they did.
Killjoys?
Yes, I did.
I was
Yes.
so mad about that.
Yeah. We'll talk about that offline, but yeah, I just wanted to say shout out to Chris Jenn and Arjun.
Oh
They
my
were kind of
God,
cute.
so
They were
sweet.
cute. I promised as a reader of the books that we will get more women on the Rosai, and I just
Yes.
want you to put that on the record, please.
There will be equal parts male and female crew members on the Rossi.
Yes, I need that. I need that.
And the racial balance will change. Actually, no, it won't, because Holden's the black. Brown. The whole Holden's black. Never mind. It'll say, everybody except for one gonna be black or brown. So
okay,
that's fine.
That's what's up.
Holden is black.
That's let me wrap up this show. Because we're not even gonna get into that last scene of season 2, episode 6. Even though I'm dying to talk about it, but it's spoilery as fuck.
It's so bad. We can talk about it offline.
Okay, but yeah. If we ever do talk about the Expanse again, let us know in an email if you want us to talk about the Expanse again. Then we'll talk about what happened in this last episode, because holy fuck. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. Anyways, hit us up. Kat is at xrecluse. I'm at dustdaughter. You can contact the show by emailing blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Let us know if you think we need a separate Ratchet Research Twitter, but judging by the response, we're good for now. So let us know what you'd like us to do for future episodes, and what you think of the show so far. And until next time, bye.
Bye.
Mess.